very much. Glenn, can you read through the names of the people that we believe are here at the moment?
Excuse me, Mr. Hogarth now joins.
Hello,
Excuse
Rob.
Me, William Drake now joins.
We've got Raimundo Becker from the board, Chuck Gomes, Avery Doria, with Margie in San Francisco, we have John Nevitt, Jeff Newman, and Mary Wong, I believe. We have David Maher, Bill Drake, and somebody else joined.
Steve Metallitz.
Steve Metallitz, and Alan Greenberg is on the Adobe Connect. And then for staff, we have Marika Koenig, I believe Rob Hogarth. I see Liz Gaster is on Adobe Connect, and Margie Milam, and Glenda St. Germain, myself. Have I left off anybody?
Yeah, this is Margie. We actually have someone else here, too. We have Hector Manoff is also here in the room with us.
Who was that, sorry?
Hector.
Oh, Hector, yes. Thank you.
Hey, did you get Tim Release in there, Glenn? I didn't catch it.
Tim, welcome. I didn't, no. And Julie Headland has just joined us, too, from
Glenn,
staff.
Do you have me on this teleconference, Alan?
Alan, yes, thank you.
Ken Bauer's on.
Well, hello, Ken. Okay, let's get started. First of all, just in case anyone didn't see the email, or the agenda is, as I put it last week, is that we're going to start from where we left off, which I believe is number 7, and follow the same process as last time, see if we can reach agreement on any of them. On any that we don't, basically state the differences, but move the discussions to the mailing list. Hopefully we get through the rest of the list today. We really need to get through the rest of the list today. Then basically Chuck, Margie, and or I, and we've actually talked together, will put together the question list as was done last time, send it out in both separate threads and as a single question list so people get to work with their preference. Give people a couple days to get their discussion started. Then we'll try to put together at the beginning of next week a sort of compound set of questions and our best guess at reading the discussions where we are at the moment, and then we'll start going through it again in more detail, trying to resolve the issues. I'm suggesting that we do this weekly until we get this off our plate. There may be other board questions, and I guess that's about it. Any questions on that?
Avery, Alan, my only question is, if we're going to start trying to go through them one by one and resolve issues starting next week, I for one, I suspect I'm not the only one. I'm going to not be available on that conference call, and I'm wondering how do we
Okay,
sure
what I would suggest is that we basically work on the list as much as possible, talk on the phone weekly. Anything we reach an agreement on the phone 1 week, we will come back to the following week so that somebody will have had a chance to see it on the email list, to sleep on it, to talk to constituencies, and then come back. And if the following week we still have agreement and consensus on it, then we call it discussed and move on. Does that sound like a way to make sure anyone who's forced to miss something still has a chance to contribute?
That's fine with me, as long as we cover the case where people have to miss 2 meetings, but let's assume that won't happen until it does.
Well, hopefully they'll be able to also be on the list, but if that happens, that's an exception case, and we'll deal with it, but I don't want to make rules that are so complicated we cover all the exception cases at this point. Otherwise, we'd be writing bylaws. Okay, 7. Basically, 7 deals with electing a GNSO chair. There was, and I'm trying to read this, to elect GNSO chair for a term. It's all highlighted. I think what was added was the or both.
Can
at a
we
meeting
get the right
or
page
both.
On Adobe Connect?
Huh?
Could we get the right page on Adobe Connect?
Oh, I'm sorry. We do. We have the right page on Adobe Connect.
Maybe I need to refresh.
So it was both just highlighted, or was there a change there?
It was added, I think, in other words,
Oh, there were two changes. There was also, and one or more vice chairs, because there's a separate paragraph.
Yeah, that was, there was a deletion there. The reason I suggested or both, I didn't see any reason to restrict our voting at a meeting. We have a procedure for voting, absentee voting, and so forth. So I just thought, you know, whether we do it by written ballot or a meeting or both, it doesn't really matter, does it?
Does anybody object to the or both? Okay, then I think we'll call that one okay. Now, there was the deletion of the and one or more vice chairs and a paragraph below about vice chairs, each house selecting a vice chair who will be vice chair of the whole of the council. For a term of the genus, so specify the same wording as the chair. Is there any, and the or both is in there too, is there any objection to that change? Hearing no objection. And as I say, next time at our meeting, we should also touch on these things where we had no objection, just to make sure nothing has occurred to anyone. Hopefully it won't have. Okay, so move on and mark those two as tentatively okay. Moving on to 8. Oh, this is very choppy movement. Okay. In 8, it was, for voting purposes, the GNSO Council shall be organized into a bicameral House structure as described below. The recommended change that was typically for voting purposes. And so basically it was replacing only with typically. Any objection to that change?
Aubrey, it's Margie. I just had a question. I think that was a change from Philip. Why the insertion? I think our understanding was that the House structure was purely for voting and that it wasn't meant to be a whole other organization with other obligations. And so I'm just trying to understand, you know, whether we see the Houses as having any other function other than just voting.
Well, they'll certainly, on a first blush myself, they'll certainly have their own sort of housekeeping stuff to do and such. So just you know, how they're going to do something, what process they want to follow for something. So I would think that we can't exclude it, and I think that's why typically would cover it. But just, again, to say that there's no occasion when the other house will take any action as a house or have any conversation as a house, I don't know.
Given we haven't decided on the NCA appointment process yet, that may be one of them.
Do people object to the change? So, and I understand, Margie, you're concerned about it because you don't know what is not typical.
Yeah, that's right. I don't really have an objection to it. I was just trying to understand whether we had a different viewpoint of what the houses would do. But that, I mean, everything you've described so far seems about right.
I tend to see it as, you know, any group has housekeeping. And so that would be an atypical circumstance where, you know, this would also be the case, I would assume. So is it okay to leave that, as I say, we'll come back again, but to say, leave that one as accepted? Okay, the next one, I'm going to stay away from names because names is already an open topic that we're covering, so there's no need to get into the names discussion now. I'm sure we haven't reached closure on it yet. So as far as I can tell, the next two changes were names. Then there was each member of a voting house is entitled to cast one vote in a separate matter. That was fine. That was left unchanged. And then
I have
was this in blue. And okay, this one is yours, Chuck, right?
Sure. Yeah. And I, like I say in my comment, I feel very strongly that the voting thresholds need to be in the bylaws. Or at least the bylaws must require changes to the threshold in a very rigid way. Rigid is a bad word. I mean, it should be hard to change that.
Right.
because the thresholds were such a critical part of the compromises that we reached in the agreement of the structure that those should not be too easily changed.
Chuck, it's Alan. From my understanding, how could it be changed easier than the GNSO passing a motion? I can see higher thresholds, but I don't see any lower ones.
It's harder to change the bylaws than it is for the GNSO to take action, Alan. That's
right, but they both require, even the bylaw, I mean, even the operating rules and procedures, as I understand them, are board approved. They're just not bylaws.
That's what I was saying. I can't see anything less than requiring board approval.
Do both require the same threshold on the board for approval?
This is Margie. That's what we envision. We envisioned those rules to be approved by the board, that they weren't some light rules. They were, you know, ones that had a board approval and then board changes, but we just felt that, you know, it might be best to keep them out of the bylaws, but it's not, I mean, if that's a problem, we don't feel that strongly about it. It was just a suggestion.
Do the rules require a supermajority of the count of the board to approve it? I believe the bylaws do.
Yeah, this
but it would be majority of the board?
This is John. You need 2/3 vote of the board to amend the bylaws. So
right.
I thought that that was an important and vital part of the compromise and should be in the bylaws.
Yeah, this is Steve. I think Chuck was suggesting that we might need a higher threshold in order to change the thresholds, right?
Well, thanks, Steve. I put it as an or. Either they need to be in the bylaws, and then that to me is the best solution, or we would have to establish such higher threshold that it accomplishes the same thing. So I was trying to be a little bit flexible there while at the same time. My choice would be that thresholds need to be in the bylaws and not just in the operating rules and procedures.
Does anybody object to them being in the bylaws? I understand that staff is fine with making that change. Does anyone object to that all thresholds being in the bylaws? And going, therefore, through a bylaw change anytime the council decided to change by thresholds. Hearing no objection, that should probably be amended as recommended by Chuck. Okay? As I said, we'll go through it again next time just to see that the language is fine, but I guess it would.
So just to clarify, Aubrey, so in number A, with the exception of the house name, everybody on this call at least is supportive of the changes.
Right. Yes, that we accepted it typically, and that we are dropping the exception. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's fine.
That said it correctly. Okay, thanks. Margie, you have that? I'm assuming that was... Okay, then moving on to the next one, which is Article 10, Number 1. The following stakeholder groups are hereby recognized, and I don't see any changes in that. Okay, then there's a registry stakeholder group representing all GTLD registries under contract to ICANN and including as observers organizations who wish to become registries. I guess this was commercial stakeholder group or proposed commercial stakeholder group amendment.
Hey, Aubrey.
I know I was corrected last time for calling it a fillip.
Hey, Aubrey, this is Jeff Newman.
Yes.
I don't think that language should be added as to anything, because otherwise we would say, well, why wouldn't we add that to the commercial stakeholder group or observers wishing to become members of the commercial group? And it doesn't make sense. I don't think we need to, in the bylaws or any document, state that the registry stakeholder group must include observers. We have a stakeholder charter that's out for public comment. People can comment on that. And remember, we need board approval to change our charter. That's the appropriate place for it and not here.
Okay, thank you. Does the other side wish to sort of state why it believes this is a necessary change?
This is Steve. I have a question for Jeff. I saw that, if I'm not mistaken, that the registry stakeholder group charter has been changed and is now again.
It's been, we actually put more detail into it. There was some detail that we didn't fully have. So we added that detail, and then it's out for public comment, but it's not a final stakeholder group charter until it gets approved by the board.
Steve, this is Chuck. When we first submitted our charter to meet the deadline, there were a few holes that we left, and we identified those. We flagged those in the first posted one. What we did is we went in and filled in those holes. It was some details in terms of voting procedures and so forth. And just for information, our charter in both cases, the first one and the revised one, does include observers' ability to participate as observers.
Okay, thanks. So I'm assuming with Philip's admonition, which we really can't get by, that until he's been included, Philip, you haven't joined yet, have you? No. That we need to take this one to the list, that there's a disagreement and it's not accepted by...
Avery, it's Alan. One comment regarding item B, which we're getting to.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Okay.
Hey, Avery, John has a comment.
Well, I was going to comment on B also, so.
Okay. So A is on the list of discussion items.
You could put B on the list of discussion items, too, or you could just delete the language that Philip suggested.
I can't. Basically, I'm not going to delete the language until we get agreement to delete the language. Okay, does anyone want to state the issue?
The language?
Huh?
I'm coming to this a little bit late because I didn't get to last meeting. This is Tim. I guess I'm just confused about why we can't, what the process is. And I don't remember any agreement to include the language, but we need agreement to get rid of it.
We won't have resolved the issue. In other words, we have contention on the language, and we won't have reached congruence on the language until either you all agree to the language or the person that's suggesting it deletes it. So it's not that it's added, but neither it's a proposed change that we need to resolve before moving on. So
I apologize if this has been covered, but I just want to be careful that by silence we don't assume agreement necessarily. In other words, it may not matter to somebody, and they don't speak up, and so only a few actually object, and it ends up staying in just because the majority.
I don't suspect that's going to happen, but I do encourage people to raise their objections.
Aubrey, I suggested a little different approach than Philip because I thought his was a little bit problematic in the sense that if we applied that to anybody that's not on the call, we're not going to get anywhere. It seems to me it might be better if there's agreement on the call to delete the suggested changes, Philip and anyone else for that matter still has an opportunity to object to that and do that on the list, and I think that's a cleaner way to do it, but I'll go with your decision on which way you
go. I would say that by default, I would go with what you're suggesting, but then he specifically asked to basically count his opinion before making the call. I tend to go with that in this case.
Yeah, I think that was a very poor suggestion on his part, but I'll live with it.
And it really doesn't matter. I'll ask the question, though. And then we'll hold it, but we'll mark it. Is everyone else on the call fine with deleting this language?
No.
In A.
This is Steve. We would object to deleting the language.
Okay, thank you. So that solves the issue. How about in B?
Why is that, Steve?
Well, we're supporting the Phillips proposal. I think the comparison
I know
that
you're
made,
supporting his proposal. Why?
The comparison that was made to... people that want to become commercially involved with the internet or something is a false comparison. I mean, someone doesn't become a registry unless ICANN decides that they our registry and they agree to take on those obligations, whereas someone can become a commercial entity on the Internet, which I think is the phrase that's now used, without any ICANN action whatsoever. So the idea that they would have the same, you know, that they're in the same situation as far as influencing ICANN policy, I think, is a false comparison.
Oh, yeah. By the way, I don't disagree with you on that last part of what you said, but what I don't understand is that when you add including as observers organizations who wish to become registries, that's kind of silly.
you can't measure that. And look at the stakeholder group charter. It's got provisions in there for observer status. That's what gets reviewed by the board.
I hear that point. I think that's a good point. But, of course, the stakeholder group charter can change also, and I think
with board approval.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, I think, this is Tim. I think the question in my mind is, at what level do we all want to be involved in each other's charters? Because that can open up a can of worms, you know, all the way around.
Yeah.
And I think to the extent possible, we ought to be allowing each stakeholder group to manage their charter, observer statuses, whatever the case may be, and do as little, fiddle as little as possible with it. And I think that's the same courtesy that the other stakeholder groups would be expecting. Otherwise, we're all going to be fiddling with each other's charters to the extent that we can. And I just think it's a bad way to go and opens us up to gaming each other.
Thanks for responding.
Okay, thank you. So obviously we'll continue this one on the list and come back to it. Certainly the positions have been stated. Is there anything to add under B, assuming the same status that Steve is still supporting it maintaining there, but others would like to see it removed and it goes to the list? Are there any extra reasons or explanations to add to B that we didn't have for A?
Yeah, it's Alan. I think one of the confusing things about B is it could be read as precluding resellers forming a constituency within the commercial stakeholders group.
Okay, thank you.
You can't sit two places at once. And if you formally have a role as observer on the registrars, are you allowed to form a constituency of your own, which would happen to be in the other house because of the rules we've set up?
Okay, thank you.
It's a large group, which we don't want to disenfranchise completely.
Well, this is Steve. I would certainly be glad to have a rule precluding them from organizing within the commercial stakeholder group. I'm not sure this does that, though.
I said it could be read that way, but clearly they need to have a home somewhere. You can't rule them out as not being allowed at either side, I wouldn't think.
No, I agree. I think they belong in the registrar group.
Well, that's a different issue.
Well, and when resellers put forward a constituency proposal, then they get to choose, and the discussions happen with the stakeholder groups to find out, you know, what had happened. So, okay.
Well, to me,
so moving on, there were no changes.
Aubrey, just a second, because Tim's point is that, at least that's the way I took it, is let's assume resellers would fit in the registrar stakeholder group. The way this is worded, and in the bylaws, is that they're observers of the registrar stakeholder group and could preclude them from being a constituency there. I think that's a problem.
Yeah. Thank you.
What is the registrar?
As I say, we'll take the discussion to the list, but thank you for reinforcing the argument. Any other new content for B? Basically, I just want to make sure that the initial views get stated and that we carry on the discussion on the list. Otherwise, we won't make it to the end of the list. No change in C. In D, not touching the name change at this point. And we have an addition and members of the at-large community added. Is there objection to that that edit?
Non-commercial members.
Okay, so you would edit it to and non-commercial members of the at-large community.
And I would have put commercial individuals in P.
Okay, well, certainly a change that you can recommend.
I have an objection. First of all, the term at large is in lowercase, and it's not clear whether it's a generic, the rabble, or if it is referring to the ICANN at large, which is a defined term.
Isn't that one usually capitalized?
It is.
Okay.
But using the same word, I think, adds confusion no matter how you capitalize it. So I would object on those terms. I'm not sure why it is needed. If they're non-commercial entities, people, members of that large community, are non-commercial entities in their non-commercial
not all.
World.
Okay. Any other comments to add? Anyone in support of keeping this in?
This is Steve. I support it.
Okay. Do you have a reason other than supporting the changes made by
the expectation in the restructuring process was that members of the at-large community would participate through that stakeholder group.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments that haven't been raised yet on that issue? We'll obviously take that one to the list. The next one is the each stakeholder gets a vote clause, or is dependent upon the each stakeholder gets a vote clause, and that one has already been opened for discussion in our previous meeting. Does anybody see anything additional in this one that needs to be discussed at this point?
This is the each constituency gets a vote clause, right?
Yes, the each constituency gets a seat, essentially, clause. And then it has various ramifications throughout the bylaws.
Right.
And this is one of the ramifications. Does anyone see anything new in this issue? I'm sorry if I said it wrong.
Could you recap, Ms. John, sorry, could you recap last week where we left off on this? Is it
basically, it was left off that it seemed that there was an understanding, and also on the list in the intervening week, that there is a understanding among those of us that are either council members or council liaisons that this was not the interpretation of the guidelines from the board that we took, and that therefore this should be struck from the bylaws and all of its implications. The policy staff, on the other hand, has an interpretation that basically says in order to meet the distribution's the wrong word, but the diversity, the new members, and the representation of minorities goals that the board has, that something like this is necessary, although there may be, as I understand it, other ways of solving that. I think that's a very quick recap. If anyone needs to add anything to make me not have said your thing wrong, please speak up.
No, that's right, Aubrey. I mean, we were concerned about making sure that the new voices could have representation. However, you know, we could do that in the bylaws. We're trying to brainstorm on different ways. Our suggestion was one seat per constituency, but we hear that obviously doesn't fly, and so we're exploring other ways to give them protections and deal with what the issue of what is a constituency and what rights does a constituency have, you know, should there be constituencies, that sort of, you know, I mean, those are all those issues we'll have to explore.
And some of those we took to the board from our previous discussion. Obviously, the one of interpretation was taken to the board. If the policy staff is going to propose some new bylaws language, is there an estimate of when that would happen?
We'll do that fairly quickly. I mean, we know that we're working on the list, so we'll see if we can come up with some suggestions.
Okay, thanks. Any more issues on this one before I move on? Having moved on with the thing, I know people are looking at it. I forget that people are looking at what I'm changing. Okay, then moving on. Nothing in the two there. Okay, then the next one we have, the first two comments are yours, Chuck. And you basically changed approved constituencies. Okay, each stakeholder group is identified in paragraph one of this section, link to be done, and each of its associated constituency members, as opposed to approved constituency. No, in each of its associated constituencies, as opposed to approved constituency members. So would you like to explain, Jeff?
Well, first of all, the first change I made was just to remove what I thought was some redundancy. Approved and recognition seem to be saying the same thing. And then on the second edit, I said that it may be that membership in some stakeholder groups is not on a constituency basis. It is actually possible for a stakeholder group to be, you know, one whole constituency. I'm not advocating that or anything, but it is a possibility, and I don't think that goes against any of the board recommendations. So I just worded it in such a way that if that possibility happened, it's not a problem.
Okay. Is there any objection to that change?
On the first one, the approved, I'm not sure it is redundant because that implies that there's an ongoing requirement as opposed once it is approved the first time.
It says maintain recognition.
Right. I'm not sure approved is redundant. That is what I'm saying.
Okay. Chuck, do you object to leaving it?
No, I can. It's not a big deal.
Anybody object to leaving it?
Okay,
then approved is back in.
Steve,
how about members?
I don't object to that, but I had a question.
Huh?
I had a question.
On members? Please go ahead.
Yeah, it's not clear. I mean, when each stakeholder group and each constituency shall maintain recognition with the ICANN board. Recognition is granted by the board based upon these factors. So, obviously, constituencies might become unrecognized or new constituencies might be recognized, but is it contemplated that a new stakeholder group would be recognized through this process? Because I don't think that's what's intended here. You'd have to have some other changes in the bylaws for that to happen.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I don't see how a new stakeholder group would, because it's talking about each stakeholder group identified in paragraph one.
Yeah, so maybe we want to say recognition of constituencies is granted by the board or something like that in the second sentence.
That's a good point.
Okay, I'm not quite sure I understand the wording change.
It would insert, in the second sentence, it would insert after recognition the word of constituencies.
Maintain recognition of constituencies with the ICANN board? Recognition of constituencies is granted by the board. I get it. Okay. Anybody object to that change? Okay, Margie, do you have that one?
So it goes in the second sentence right after the word. It'll say recognition of constituencies is granted by the board.
Yeah.
I got it.
Okay, and just to go back to members, is there no objection to dropping the word members? And change a constituency to constituencies as opposed to constituency members? Okay, hearing no objection.
Not only is there no objection, it removes the confusion whether you're talking about the members of the constituency or the constituency members.
Okay, thank you. So going to the next one then, it's a CSG change, an addition to, I guess it's in the same second sentence that goes on. Yes, it's still the second sentence. An addition of consistent with prevailing privacy laws. I'm assuming no objection there. Is there one? I shouldn't assume.
This is Tim.
Yes, Tim.
It doesn't create any issue with what the prevailing privacy laws are. Is it legal opinion or whoever would be qualified to give that opinion? I guess that. But this will work. I mean, because talking about a global stakeholder group, if I'm just wondering what the prevailing privacy laws would be.
Well, they would be different in different places, and that would mean that different amounts of information could be, I mean, and we've made various, you know, other things that we've done in the council where we sort of said, obviously, you know, you have to obey the laws of the country that you're in. And so I think this is just recognizing that even if ICANN has a bylaw that says you must list all this information, if it's illegal to do so in your country because of its privacy laws, then obviously you have to be consistent with your privacy laws.
I would think
that's
better to say at the very top of ICANN's bylaws and not very
two people at once. I didn't get it. So we had Chuck and Alan wanting to speak. I heard Chuck first, so Chuck.
Yeah, would it be better to stay consistent with applicable privacy laws instead of prevailing?
Okay, Alan?
I would have thought this should be something at the top of ICANN's bylaws and not something buried in one particular clause that we're not asking, we don't ask people to violate the law where they live or work.
Yeah, but it still would make sense to put in, you know, the specific type of thing that you're concerned with at that. Okay, so I get that this one is close to being okay, but there's an alternate offered in language by Chuck, and there's a question as to whether it creates problems that was also mentioned. So this one goes on the list of things to be discussed.
Sorry, John, one other point. ICANN in its bylaws has a requirement for transparency. So my question is, in the global bylaws, is there any kind of provision related to this kind of reference to privacy laws? And if not, why would we do it in the stakeholder group level and not on the ICANN level?
Okay. Thank you. So this one we need to carry out on the list and come to an agreement on later. Okay, thank you. Moving on, we've got 20 minutes left, or rather 19. Okay, I see yellow. Okay, there's a sentence to delete. I see no comments here. Is anything in 4 an edit of yours, Chuck? No.
No, I don't.
Who did the cross out of prior to approval and confirmation? Such new constituents shall submit former charter to the board.
It was just moved up.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, I see. It was moved up. Okay, so there's no change to discuss in that one. Am I correct?
I think you're correct.
Okay, 5, on the other hand, has change. And it's basically CSG change, which basically deletes a major section of this. So deletes from the first sentence, the board may create new constituencies within any stakeholder group in response to such a petition or its own motion. So it's basically removing from the board the ability to decide to create a constituency. Is that the correct interpretation of that one?
Yeah, that's how I looked at it, and I guess my question was why would we want to take that right away from the board?
Why would we want to give it to them?
It's in it.
Well, they already have it.
That's the way it was in the prior body.
Right.
Great. But
basically, it's been that way since the beginning. Not that they ever did it, but it's been that way since the beginning. So it is a change.
This is Jeff Newman. I agree with that. I agree wholeheartedly with that change. It's supposed to be a bottom-up organization.
Okay. Does anyone disagree with that change?
Oh, I support it. If we can't get some people to put a document in, then
exactly.
I don't think there's much hope for a constituency like that.
Okay. So, okay, so then we recommend removing that. Okay, now the second sentence is dependent on that. Having removed the ability for a board to decide to create a constituency on its own motion, we don't need a sentence describing how it's done. Correct? This is one where I don't believe we necessarily need to ask the board, but we probably should inform the board, and of course Raimondo is here, that we are recommending that change. Any objection to that? So asking again, any objection to making that change? Okay, then we will consider that one as penciled in. Okay, the next note was formatted for French. Okay, in the next page, there's a note.
Yeah.
Does not appear that a transition is required, and then Chuck, I guess that's your comment?
Yeah, and I don't know, we need to spend a lot of time in this. But my point is that whether or not we need a transition article was less my point than the fact that we do, that obviously, and Rob has made this point several times recently, that there are obviously some tasks that we need to do for transition. whether it's a transition article or not. So that's basically it.
Okay. So no issue there. Okay. Then in 2, there's no changes suggested. Next page. In 3, there's a CSG parenthetical added. Which basically says, which may itself of necessity be a transitional charter. And that's in reference to constituency charters. Is that correct? And basically, if I would assume that it may be a transitional charter because the constituency is going through transition and will what, rewrite its charter later, or it will still be in negotiation with the board? I'm not quite sure I understand.
I'm not sure why it needs to be there. If a constituency supports what is clearly an interim charter and the board accepts it, so be it.
Is anyone from the CSG able to explain the necessity of this parenthetical?
I'm sorry, I can't. I'm not sure. I'm just not sure why that's in there.
Okay. Is this one we can mark as probably unnecessary, but we'll check with Philip? Philip, have you joined yet? I haven't heard you, but I figured I'd ask.
It's Alan. If it stays, the term of necessity is rather subjective, so I think it needs to be reworded if it stays.
Okay. But I'm gathering that at the moment there's no one on this call that supports making this change, other than in support of Philip's CSG position in general, but not with a reason for why.
Okay, Philip has just joined the call, by the way.
Excuse me?
Philip has just joined the call.
Okay, Philip, we've got a question for you.
Yeah.
We're at number 3 on page 11, where you added a parenthetical, which may itself of necessity be a transitional charter, and I don't think anyone really understood the reason for the change.
It's just reflecting the fact that there may be organizations, and certainly ours was one of them, I think, where because of uncertainty in terms of precisely how the elections are going to be either constituency-based or SG-based, we have got a transitional charter which may change later, that was all.
But if you make that case to the board and the board agrees, then so be it.
Right, but basically this is the transitional arguments, and I mean this is the transitional clauses.
Yes.
So.
And Phil, isn't it correct that this could, I mean, what you're doing is understood and it's reasonable, but is this parenthetical really needed to do it? It doesn't seem like it is.
The board would still need to approve this transitional charter, correct?
Correct.
So what we're saying is we could delete that and wouldn't really lose anything. Or in other ways, it doesn't really add anything.
Other than the subjectiveness of the term of necessity, which itself is going to be subject to perhaps debate.
Would there be an objection to which may be an approved transitional charter?
I would.
In that space, which just covers the concern that Philip had without the subjectivity and includes that it is approved. And even if it is superfluous, would anybody object to that?
I wouldn't object, but I don't see that it's necessary.
Philip?
I'm fine with that change.
All right, and you think it's important, though, to keep a clause?
I think it's an important flag, because it indicates that charters may be presented to the board in rapid succession.
Okay. So does anybody object to keeping a clause that says, which may be a board-approved transitional charter?
No, I actually think it's a good thing to highlight the fact that one doesn't have to make it do everything cast in stone and things can evolve.
Okay, any objections to that change? Okay, then let's leave that change in. Ooh, somebody bounced. Okay, the next two are Octobers instead of Junes. That's something essentially that we believe, but it's also something that, you know, since the board gave us our target date, we need to confirm with the board that, you know, they're fine with October, and I guess there's a meeting of the SIC in the next couple days that will take up that issue, among others. And we talked about the issue of the delay earlier. Any further comment on October?
Yes. The more I think about it, the more do we really need a date in the bylaws for this? Would it be better to have a generic statement as so determined by the board or whatever?
I would agree with Chuck. It would be much better to have such a statement.
So what would you suggest? No later than the ICANN meeting, or how would you reword it?
Prior to the, let's see.
It's the end of three and the beginning of four.
Determined by the board, the GNSO Council shall consist of.
Okay, you need to do a change for the one above, too.
Can you repeat what we're doing?
We're looking at different language than June/October 2009 in two instances, both at the end of three and at the beginning of four.
Okay.
And Chuck's suggestion, could you do that again, Chuck?
Sure. At a date to be determined by the board instead of in October or June or whatever. And again, I can live with October 2009. I just, you know, it's kind of, you know, it could change again for all we know.
The reason there's eight there in the first place is just the staff change from the ERC proposal of 2003. That had the advantage of a certain date there once the board had taken the decision, which is probably why that 15 July 2003 exists. We don't quite have that luxury at the moment, so I think Chuck's on the right track here.
I don't agree, because when this actually gets implemented, we'll know the date. I mean, I think we need a concrete date in the bylaws when we've gone from the old structure to the new structure, and to have some just kind of loose date doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I agree that it will be a date determined by the board when that happens, but we should know what that date is, and then we'll just put that date in the bylaws when it's agreed on.
And the place,
right.
The
so you're saying
I disagree with that, because we don't know when the conditions that will be necessary to be satisfied for seating the new council will have occurred. So, I mean, I hope that the board will give us as much advance notice as possible, and from our constituency, we need to know, because we've conformed the terms of our officers to when the new council is seated. But
if I understand, Margie, what you're recommending is... If I understood, Margie, what you're saying, no later than the ICANN meeting in TBD by the board 2009?
Yeah, I just, whatever, it doesn't even have to be an ICANN meeting. It could be a date. It could be December 31st. I think that the bylaws need to have a date, and we'll know what that date is when we get, you know, as we get closer to finalizing the bylaws.
When will we know what that date is? We'll know when the board tells us.
Right, but then that date that the board tells us will go in the bylaws. See, all I'm saying is that whenever it is, because this is the document that transforms everything from the existing structure to the new structure, and so I just think that's one of those things that needs to be clear whenever. I mean, we don't know the date yet, but, you know, whenever it gets set, and that's the date that should go, and we were suggesting that it would be the ICANN meeting in October 2009, but maybe it's not that date, you know.
May I suggest that you use an actual date? The ICANN meeting in October 2009 or whenever is not very definitive. We don't know if it's the beginning or the end or in the middle. So whatever you use, I support ultimately putting a date in there with enough advance notice so the various constituencies can actually meet it. But I do suggest a real date.
Okay. So the proposal would be no later than date TBD by board. And then prior to date TBD by board in the second instance. Would that be acceptable to people? So it is TBD by board. We're not positing a date now, but it satisfies the bylaw necessity of having a concrete date in the bylaw once the bylaw is passed. Is that acceptable to people?
I don't believe there is such a necessity, and I think you could just say prior to a date to be announced by the board at least 60 days in advance. And then the board adopts a resolution saying this is the date that's referred to in the transition article.
Okay, so we need to take this one on the list because we've had several suggestions of language. I would suggest that somebody for both 3 or 4, think about language and perhaps we could put a couple of the suggestions in the question. It should be easy to resolve once we just come up with wording that everyone can accept. Okay. The next one I have is next page 12, 5D. And this one is already open. This one is basically an issue that we had in the previous meeting that has been, we've asked the board to take a look at. So we've got nothing to add to this one at this point, I would suspect.
I have an open question, Avery, for the board on the whole of this section here. Is the wording here consistent with the section in the staff written constituency model charters about elections? There seems to be a slight inconsistency between constituency versus stakeholder group, and it would just be useful to have that resolved. That's just a question that can perhaps be answered offline, but I pose it now because it occurred to me today.
Okay, so that's a question that we should add to the board?
Philip, can you repeat your question? I don't understand.
Yeah, so in this section 5, it's talking about that the seats are assigned to the stakeholder group. If you look at the model charters, it seems to be suggesting that seats are council seats are selected by the constituencies. And I wondered if that is just my misreading or if one or other needs to be changed.
The constituency or stakeholder group?
If you read the model charter, it's to do with constituency.
What do you mean by model charter?
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Staff drafted a model charter that the new constituencies are using in their petitions.
Yes, Mr. Chen, doesn't that relate then to the other question that we've got about whether the council seats are per constituency or per stakeholder group? It's the same question, right, Philip?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
But this is just for the transitional period. Until such time as the stakeholder groups have done their elections and their choosing. Is that correct? So, I mean, once the stakeholder group is fully in place and have done their selection procedure, however they do it, for their seats, then it would no longer be in a transitional stage. So I'm not quite sure that I understand where the problem is.
If your understanding is correct, Avery, then I believe that the model charter may need to be rewritten. But I may be wrong.
That's probably true, Philip, because they give an example that could be inconsistent.
Avery, this is Ken Bauer. May I join?
Yes, please, Ken.
Just a quick comment on that. There may be a host of constituency charter elements that will need to be changed once these bylaws and stakeholder group issues are resolved. And that would apply to new constituencies as well as existing ones.
But I think, Philip, I think that's true, Ken, but I think Philip's point's well taken that this model charter should be fixed if, in fact, we do, as the council has, I think, unanimously supported so far, at least those participating, that this basis on constituencies versus stakeholder groups, the model charter needs to be consistent with what we finally decide.
Okay. I think we've got an issue for continuing discussion on the list. I think part of it is to make sure that we all understand the issue the same, which I'm not sure we're at the moment, and then to figure out what we want to do about it. But, okay, so this one is an issue for the list. And, Chuck, I'm glad you understand it, so in the writing. There's one more, and we're at the end of our time, but I want to look at that last one.
Avery, on 5E, I raised the issue on an earlier one, but it applies here, too, that the term non-voting member should be clarified.
Yes, okay. That's right, and we haven't ever covered that. So that one should just go directly to question so that we make sure that we create a definition somewhere of what non-voting member means.
And use it consistently.
Right. Okay, so that's an open question. Thank you for bringing it up again. And that should be on our question list that gets published this time. Then we have the last one with a couple edits, and I believe there's a Chuck edit. We'll utilize the following voting thresholds.
We're on page 14 now?
I'm on page 14, number 11, yes, sorry. And so, Chuck, do you want to discuss your two changes?
Well, one of the things in our recommendations with regard to voting thresholds is we had an other category that just everything else will require a simple majority vote of both houses. I don't think that's in here, as I recall my thinking here. That was the catch-all threshold that we had in our recommendations. I don't think we have anything for election of chair, thresholds for chair and vice chairs in the thresholds themselves. Now, that could be covered in the catch-all one, which is fine. I don't know that that's a problem. And then my second comment there is that the scope needs to be defined. I was assuming that it means within ICANN's mission and the GNSO's mission, but it could meet people could interpret other things there. So I guess it's a comment somewhat like Alan's that we probably better be a little more clear in terms of what we mean by scope. If we mean, like I assume, within ICANN's mission and the GNSO's mission, that's a real easy fix.
Isn't scope a particular question that's currently answered by the issues report?
Hey, guys, this is Jeff Newman, if I can jump in the queue.
And Alan.
Wait. Okay, so, yeah, I've got Philip speaking now, and then Jeff, and then Alan. Okay, anyone else in the queue while I'm taking a queue? As I say, I do want to end this one soon. We're over our hour, but go ahead, Philip.
Yeah, I think I'll just finish. I think scope was is currently a question answered by ICANN's general counsel in the issues report, and I thought that was its reference here.
Okay, thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, so my comment here is actually chair of the PDP work team, and not necessarily what I personally believe, but I'm just not offering an opinion. But basically, the group discussed this, and during the discussion of the group, Ken Bauer and others had represented that there is currently a draft of other changes to the annex that's being circulated internally within ICANN, and we have not seen that draft of any changes. In addition, the PDP work team is not necessarily comfortable with making these changes at this point in time until they're done with their recommendations regarding the PDP, because it's just not sure how all of this fits in with all their discussions and the kind of confusion it's going to create if this section appears in the new transition bylaws, how that gels with everything else that's going on. So that's just a statement, and it's an issue we need to get further clarification on.
So I have two questions then. One is this also part of that document that we will be seeing real soon now? And two, does that proposal from the staff also include the other things that Chuck was talking about, like the catch-all, like the election of chair, which I believe we had a 60% threshold from each house, if I remember correctly, and so on. So, Ken or someone, can you answer that?
I'm sorry, this is Ken. I missed the question.
The question was, based upon what Jeff just said, is that extra information part of what was discussed earlier as stuff you're discussing now and hope to get out to us real soon now?
Not exactly. What happened independently was that the legal department in ICANN, after they looked at this set of bylaw amendments, they decided that they thought it made more sense not to have a transition article, and so they took all the elements of the transition article and they just parsed them out to where they belong, whether it was Article 10, Section 5, or in the case of these voting thresholds, they wanted to put them in Annex A. And so really all they did was make an attempt to go through Annex A, find where these thresholds were, and take that language out of transition and put it into Annex A. There wasn't any other attempt to make any other substantive changes to Annex A, just the voting thresholds.
Okay. Thank you. So this is something basically we should put on hold until we see this other information.
Just FYI, this is Jeff, and we've been waiting for that document for about 2 months now.
Okay. Is there any clue when we'll see it?
The reason we hadn't distributed it is because as we had the discussion on, for example, the one voting for, you know, a seat per constituency, all that stuff that's kind of moot now, the document that they gave to us has some of that, you know, old language. So it didn't make sense to circulate it. But if you want to see the language that relates to Appendix A, I mean, that's not a problem. It's just...
Yeah, I think certainly the language that goes to the... to the threshold, we could get as soon as possible. However, even putting this one aside, we have enough work to keep us working through on the other stuff, just leaving a placeholder for this that we will have to come back to it. Any objection to basically tabling this particular discussion for now until we get more information?
Legal? Alan, I have no objection to tabling it, but I think we want to remember Chuck's comment on the use of the word scope for sedation. Has two different meanings, and we should make it be explicit which meaning we're talking about.
Okay. Well, we can include the word scope, the issue about the word scope, as an issue now.
Yeah, I don't think it's a debate between anyone.
Well, we just have to make sure it's properly defined and everyone agrees with it.
Understood the meaning in any given place.
And that it means there is some discussion to make sure we get to something that everyone agrees is the correct meaning. We don't have to have a disagreement to have a discussion.
Okay.
Okay, and I'm assuming that this October 2009 would fall in the same dates category as something that, you know, needs to be a definitive date, and we need to talk about some more how we're dealing with definitive dates.
Also, the same is true of the reference to June 2009 in paragraph 11.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, there is a date there. I have a feeling, yeah. Well, that's one that... Obviously, the person that went through changing all the October, June to October's missed. Okay, so I think we've made it to the end. I think except for the issues that are tabled and for any new content that we're going to get from the staff related to new ideas that they're bringing in terms of constituencies, stakeholder groups, and whatever else, we've got this first chunk of work cut out for us. So as I said, the first set of questions should show up tomorrow. And I'd like to ask people to get their first set of discussion points in by the end of the weekend. Hopefully we can reach closure on some of them. We did reach closure on some things today, or at least the appearance of closure. And we'll be back at it next week. Any other comments people would like to add?
Is there a date and time for our call next week, or are we going to have a doodle?
I don't know of a date or time. You know, I don't know if this Tuesday slot works out well for people, but otherwise Glenn will need to do that. Doing a doodle takes about a week, several days. Does anyone object who's here now to this call at this time? Philip, is this a always problem for you, or is this just a peculiar circumstance?
No, I just had a meeting today, which had a clash. What a week, but Tuesday, aren't we?
I won't be able to make it next Tuesday at this time. So.
Okay, so maybe we do need to, unfortunately, ask Glenn to do another scheduling exercise. But it would be good if we could find a permanent slot for the next. It's going to take us several weeks to get through this. And, of course, the sooner we get through it, the sooner we can cancel any meetings we set up for the future. But not only do we have the issues that we've already got to go through, and then we'll get the feedback from the board to go through, but then we're going to get some new content to be discussed from the policy staff. So I think it's going to be at least several weeks, and I do think that this has a sense of urgency to it that we should try and meet on it weekly. And also, I do think that I will schedule a face-to-face meeting for it, if I can find the schedule to work, for the weekend in Sydney. Any other comments? And please, let's continue discussing this on the list. The more we can resolve on the list, the fewer meetings we have to have. In which case, I thank you all, and I'll talk to you soon.
Hi, Ari.
Thank you, Ari.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Heather. Heather?